The gorgeous love theme from Spartacus, the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra performing the music of Alex North here on The Oasis. It is 3:32. My name is Mark Wigmore. Great to be with you. It is time once again for our look at the arts. Terry Mosher is here. The prolific writer has well over 40 books to his credit. He's been a regular speaker during Moses Neimer's Idea City conference, and you can watch his talks at ideacity.ca. But if you are a Canadian culture vulture and follow politics, you probably best know Terry as a legendary Canadian political cartoonist, drawing under the name Aislinn for the Montreal Star and then the Montreal Gazette for decades. His drawings have been enjoyed throughout North America, printed by Atlantic Monthly, Harper's, Time Magazine, Reader's Digest, and the New York Times. His latest effort is the book Professional Heckler, The Life and Art of Duncan McPherson. In it, he shares memories of his fellow cartoonist who worked for the Toronto Star from the late 1950s through the early 90s. McPherson was one of the most successful illustration commentators this country has ever produced. It's my pleasure to welcome Terry Mosher to the New Classical FM, and great to be with you.
Yes, Mark. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm very well, and just thrilled to have you here this afternoon. This excerpt that was put out in the Star over the weekend, just a joy to read. You really take us to a moment in time. Why was it so important for you to share Duncan's story?
Well, several reasons. You know, I'm in the business of drawing political cartoons, and we have excellent political cartoonists, and have for a long time in the country. The King of the Castle was Duncan McPherson, and
sure.
In his time, he was world-renowned, really, for the excellent work that he did. He died in 1993, Mark, just as the Internet was starting to come along.
Mm.
We had no idea at the time how big this thing was going to, this cute thing that we had on our computer. No idea.
Right. Yeah.
But as a result of Duncan dying, there was very little presence of him online, and remains that way, and so people began forgetting about him. And I would talk to art students or give presentations here and there and mention the great Duncan McPherson, and people would look him up on Google.
Sure.
They didn't know who he was.
Sure.
I knew Duncan. He gave me a lot of terrific advice in the 1970s when I was getting started. And it bothered me that he was being forgotten. And I think you can probably say that a lot of people who, depending on public taste, people are starting to forget about them. And so I was talking to different people about this, including members of his family. And I kept saying, somebody, should write a book on Duncan.
That's what happens when you put up your hand.
Yeah, exactly. And in any case, I had a meeting with John Hondrick at the Toronto Star, who, you know, was talk about King Kong. He was the head guy down at the Star for years. And John said, well, why don't you do it? Why don't you write the book? And Ian McPherson, Duncan's son, said, yeah, Terry, you do it. You write pretty good.
You do, and I want to say that from what we saw in the excerpt in the Star just over the weekend, your writing is so rich here. You really put us into the newsrooms of the late 50s, and there was a sort of a harshness to it, but also a playfulness. It was a time at a place like the Star when it was very exciting to be there. There was a little money coming in, readership was up, meetings at fancy hotels. It must have been so lovely for you to be able to go back to that time and place that, you know, you had some experience with as well.
Yes, I did, and I freelanced for the Star for quite a number of years, doing this, that, and the other. So I got to know a fair number of people there. But I've got to tell you that some people, when I would call them and say, "Look, I'm writing a book on Duncan McPherson," to a person, they were all so delighted that I was doing it, and were very cooperative. And if they weren't senile, they would give me some wonderful anecdotes about the man and his time and so on. So the cooperation was absolutely terrific, including the people at the Star who were delighted that I was writing this book. So it was a real group effort.
Talk to us about that personal struggle that someone like Duncan goes through. He was sort of miserable his first year at the Star, and I think that speaks to his artistry. He needed a little space. What kind of atmosphere do you need to do this type of work? Because it is a little different than what most people do for a living.
Well, Duncan's need for space helped us all.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, because up until his time, cartoonists were pretty much taken for granted. They sort of did these funny drawings that appeared on the editorial page to go with editorials. They had to attend boring editorial meetings and listen to people suggest six or seven or eight ideas and agree with them. Well, Duncan wouldn't put up with any of that, thankfully. And he said, I'm not going to meetings, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, and furthermore, you either print the cartoon or you don't. I mean, it sounds very arrogant, but it is, with a person of that talent, absolutely necessary to not have to listen to people who know nothing at all about drawing or satire.
Right.
So he insisted on all that, and because he was so popular so quickly in 1958-59 when they hired him, Pierre Burton actually hired him at the Star, that he eventually demanded that he be allowed to do this and also take breaks and travel. And he got everything he demanded from the Star. Now, here's the thing. Here's where the gratitude comes in. In 1976, I was doing a lot of work in New York and tempted to go to New York. And Duncan said, no, don't do that. You've got a great situation there in Quebec with all of this political stuff happening.
Yeah.
Stay in Montreal. And thank God I did. Stay in Montreal and quit the newspaper, and then they'll come back to you, and then you get a juicy contract.
Yeah, he knew something about that, didn't he? Yeah,
he did. So I did just that, and probably the best advice I've ever had. Therefore, I almost owe Duncan to write his biography and put him back on the map.
There are several images that were posted in that Star article earlier this week. I love the one of Pierre Trudeau holding up a ping pong paddle while reading, and all the conservatives are madly batting ping pong balls at him, and he's not even paying any attention, but every ball's hitting the paddle and being sent back to his rivals. Just wonderful, very funny. Were there a couple of images of his, I know it's impossible, but maybe that stick out to you that you thought were particularly standouts within his drawing career?
Well, yes. Another Pierre Trudeau was of him sort of dancing with a couple of robust ladies, dancing away, drinking champagne, that the other, and kicking John Q. Public in the butt sort of to get out of the way.
Right.
And this was at a time when Trudeau was just spending government money.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much beautiful detail, and I point this out in the book. This is, I think, one advantage of the book. I go into specific details on how Duncan drew things, why he drew them, and all of that sort of thing, which I think adds a lot of interest to the book. It's not just a collection of 300 or 400 of his best cartoons. There are details on the people he worked with and that sort of thing. So the Justin Trudeau, that's one of my favorite. We put it right up of him dancing.
Right.
There's so many others, too, from politicians who, like Robert Stanfield, some people we've forgotten. He had magnificent drawings of Stanfield.
And people point out, too.
A local Toronto politician, he really made himself drawing Toronto at a time when it was changing so dramatically in the early 60s. Suddenly they had a Jewish mayor that was sort of suddenly embracing all of this cosmopolitan stuff he was drawing at that time.
Yeah, the transformation of Toronto the good. And
yes, exactly.
Your peers, and you point out in the book as well, that he had just these little drawing details and how clothing folds when you wear it. He just had a fantastic eye for these minute details that we might not otherwise notice as laymen.
Well, he said almost boastfully, I taught myself how to draw.
Uh-huh.
And that is a complicated thing in terms of drawing what you see. A lot of people can draw, but they can't draw what they see in front of them. He could. He worked as a young man drawing for the Eaton's catalog, and he had to do all of these drawings of buttons and suits and this, that, or the other in minutes to produce, and very, very well. And he brought that to he became, in my estimation, one of our great artists, not just a cartoonist, but a great artist.
How do you feel about your profession these days? A lot of new talent arriving. You mentioned the arrival of the internet shortly after he passed. Such a different media landscape. Everybody seems to want to be heard politically, talent or no talent these days, using social media. What do you think of the game that you've been so successful with, but is ultimately changing?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of talent out there and a lot of other people who are very loud.
and some That's a nice way of putting it, yeah.
Some of the combination of the two. But nevertheless, I'm not... Look, it's very difficult for a cartoonist. It's easy for an editor to drop a cartoonist and just pick up syndicated cartoons for $10 each.
Sure.
So we have suffered in terms of the profession as newspaper cartoonists. A lot of people have lost their job. When I started out in this business, Mark, there were 35 or 40 cartoonists working here in Canada, and now there are perhaps a dozen. But I'm not worried about us finding a platform. When younger people come in to see me, and a lot do, and they've got talent and they want to do that, I say, look, print isn't the future. You've got to find some way, a platform on the internet, and then the problem, of course, becomes how do you make a living from it? Well, some people are. So look to those people for examples. If you look, you know, just Google a business of a successful cartoonist on the internet. And oddly enough, there's more freedom on the internet to do what you want to do because you're not answering to some editor.
That's true. Professional
I'm not worried. I think it's going to be okay in the long run.
Professional Heckler, The Life and Art of Duncan McPherson, available now where you buy books, and you can watch great talks with Terry Mosher, who we're listening to right now, speaker with Moses Nimer's Idea City, on the website, ideacity.ca. And Aislinn, Terry Mosher, a real pleasure to speak to you this afternoon. I could really honestly talk to you all afternoon, but we need to play some music.
Good for you, Mark. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you for being here, and you're with The Oasis here on the New Classical FM.